This week's podcast is sponsored by Paragonics Technologies, whose mission is to create a new standard for organ preservation and transport that improves patient outcomes worldwide. Paragonics strives to protect the ultimate gift with the dignity and safety it deserves to give patients every possible advantage to thrive. This first-of-its-kind device provides a sterile temperature and pressure-controlled environment for organs traveling between operating rooms. The award-winning SherpaPak cardiac transport system is designed to be easy to use in stressful, fast-paced environments where there is no room for error. Hello, this is Dr. Gary Sherman, the Heart Guy, and I welcome you to our exciting and informative podcast titled The Heart Guy Presents the Heart of the Matter, bringing you interesting discussions and conversations related to the vast and important subject of heart disease, heart failure, organ donation, and everything related to those things in today's ever-changing world. I'm extremely honored to have as my special guest today an inspiring contributor to our global heart health community, Dr. Bhanu Gupta. Dr. Gupta attended medical school at BJ Medical College at University of Pune, India. He completed his residency training at Mount Sinai in the Bronx, New York, where I was a patient for nearly 2 years, actually, and went on to the renowned Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, University of Missouri, Kansas City, as well after that. And Dr. Gupta's final training was done at Mayo Clinic, Jacksonville, Florida, for heart failure and transplant medicine. Dr. Gupta was chosen as the resident of the year during his residency at Mount Sinai, and he established and founded the Advanced Heart Failure and Transplant Fellowship Program in the state of Kansas at Kansas University, where he also serves as program director. Dr. Gupta is married to Shilpa Singh, and his greatest gift is his almost five-year-old incredible son named Rohan. Dr. Gupta, welcome to The Heart Guy Presents the Heart of the Matter.
Gary, it's pleasure, my pleasure to be with you.
Yeah, thank you so much. So I figured we'd start out easy. Could you tell me a little bit about what it was like growing up in India, and when did you know you were going to be a doctor?
That's a very multifold question. I truly appreciate it. Growing up in India was extremely blissful time I had. My mom and dad both are in education field, and after graduating from my high school, we did not have many options available. Your parents usually dictate of what you want to be and what opportunities would arise. My two older brothers were in the engineering side, and so, my mom and dad said, we have enough of engineers in our family, so you better choose medicine. And I was like, okay, it sounds like a fun field. I took my entrance exam with almost 500,000 people competing for 1,000 seats, and here we are. And I eventually, I decided to come to the United States, where it is the place where the medicine, surgery, and all the advancements in the field of medicines are happening and continue to happen.
I think most people don't realize the competition for those spots in India to become a doctor there. It's very competitive.
Yes, it is. It is. It is fun. It is fun, though. Yeah. It is fun. Yeah.
That's great. The only thing I know about Pune is I think it's the badminton capital of the world. Am I right?
That is correct. That is correct. And there's a lot of the Pune University is very leading in physics, nuclear physics, and also as a health in a lot of medical schools in the city. It's called the Oxford of the East.
Right. Yeah. And IT too, I think, is really
that is correct. That
very
is
important
correct.
Place for IT as well. Yeah. Yeah. Very important city. I did visit India. I've said this on a number of my previous podcasts. I was to four or five cities in India, so I feel blessed to have done that. And it was a great trip. So I hope to get back there someday. When all this pandemic is over, we can travel again.
Absolutely, absolutely. After a heart transplant, Gary, I'm sure you will have enormous, enjoyment in India after the pandemic is over.
Yeah, traveling again, there's nothing like that. Yes. You learn a lot about the world and about people when we travel. And I was blessed to be able to take my two sons also to many places in the world where they learned that, there were good people all over the world. So
absolutely, absolutely.
So let me skip ahead if I can. You have said that early recognition of heart failure is very critical to reversing the disease process. Could you please share with me what are the challenges in really knowing if you're dealing with heart failure?
Gary, I think I'm glad that you asked this question. It is one of the fundamental questions what we face in a day-to-day practice for advanced heart failure is the late referral coming to our centers where people either do not have options which are available, such as LVAD or cardiac transplant, because we need to have other organs working harmoniously with your heart and in a reasonably optimal function we need in order to proceed with this advanced therapy, such as LVAD or cardiac transplantation. Then majority of the patients end up developing renal dysfunction. Their lung functions are quite compromised. And as a result of it, we end up giving them either, you know, palliative inotrope therapy, which is a stimulant for the heart through the running through the IV, or, you know, that's not the optimal outcome. But on the other hand, if they are referred early before, you know, their end organ dysfunction, we call kidney or liver dysfunction, ensues, we can offer them these therapies. And some of the medications, as you know, the heart failure patients are, despite about 6.5 million patients in the United States, they are suboptimally treated with the goal-directed heart failure therapy, which are available, such as, you know, the beta blockers. Only 40% people are on beta blockers when they come to us. ACE inhibitors are only 60-65%. And with the newer therapy, such as sacubitril and valsartan combination, which is substantially improves the heart failure, is underutilized in these patients. And the heart failure as a field, we have every year we are getting more therapies to improve survival as a combination of medication. So as a heart failure specialist, we can delay the process of or the disease process. And in fact, some of the disease process we can reverse so that patient may not need those advanced therapies for a few more years.
Yeah, and you are right. It's funny, when I was doing on stage presentations about congestive heart failure, particularly as a dentist, I was explaining to dentists the relationship between dental disease and heart disease, and that out of that grew some presentations to nurses. And I asked my nurse practitioner up in my hospital in New York. I said, "What is your pain point? What is the biggest, you know, pain point that you have?" And she actually said they do not send them soon enough. So just like you suggested at that point, that was the case, and hopefully, with all this awareness and education, that's becoming less of a problem.
Yeah, I know. Just to further extend on the point is that, you know, even within the cardiology community, patients, just because of the subspecialty of heart failure is evolving, the cardiologists are trying to do what best they can do. On the other hand, as a heart failure specialist, we can actually work with combination of medications. We have resources available to see the heart failure patients frequently. Because of the side effects of the medications, we can better manage them.
Yeah.
So as a team, we are better positioned and equipped to take care of this sicker patient population and try to improve. And we actually have data available to improve their survival on long term. So
yeah.
People ask me, what are the signs for referral, early referral? And I would say if anybody has had more than one hospitalization or two hospitalizations related to heart failure within a year,
yes,
irrespective of their etiology or the reason for the heart failure,
yes,
they should be referred to heart failure specialist. If people have low blood pressure and not able to tolerate the medications of what they're supposed to improve survival, that's the sign where they need to see heart failure specialists. If their kidneys are not getting better, if they're losing too much protein in their urine, if they're getting recurrent swelling in their legs and not responding to the usual doses of diuretics or the water pills,
yes,
those are the times when they need to be referred. If they are having shocks from their devices, defibrillators, frequently, I mean, those are, you know, there are many other signs I can go on and talk about, but those are
And there are many. It sounds like there are many signs that you can go to make that determination. I'll tell you personally, by the way, of course, the exacerbations. I stayed with my heart failure for quite a number of years on Entresto and those kind of medications, and I did rather well for a long time. And my stoicism was such that I, you know, wanted to be the one that survived and not had to have a transplant or an LVAD. I was going to defeat it, just have the heart failure and manage with medications. And I did that for a long time. So to your point, and the medications were fine. I didn't have really many side effects for as long as I was able to maintain, good enough health to keep going without needing surgery.
No, Gary, you are absolutely right. And I think you are pointing out the very important aspect of heart failure natural history, that we can alter the natural history of heart failure by bending the curve into the patient's benefit by 3 to 5 or 7 years. Yeah. But on the other hand, after those altered natural history or the better management of heart failure, eventually everybody requires a better look into what advanced therapies you would need. For example, let me tell you this is that if somebody develops heart failure at the age of 35 and, with these combination of medication currently what we have, we can prolong their good quality of life. Their survival can be prolonged for about 12 to 15 years with current therapies. Wow. However, when they hit 50, they would probably need the advanced therapies.
Yes, but that's a lot of years. I mean, that's a lot of years to be able to go without having to enter into the realm of advanced therapies. And so they gain a lot of years, a lot of good years, living a pretty normal life, as I did.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Yeah. And just to make this point, as you said, if we had the same 35-year-old person in 2001, we probably would have prolonged only 5 years to 7 years of his life. So with current therapy, we can benefit additional 7 years of life. And I would say if I develop heart failure in 2030, the kind of evolution in the pharmacotherapy for heart failure, maybe we can buy additional 3 to 5 more years in 2030.
Yeah.
So it is quite fascinating that we are rapidly moving forward by management of heart failure. And I think this is a win-win situation for most of the patients who develop heart failure now compared to what if they would have developed heart failure 15 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great, the advancement. I feel like just a person in the middle of the history of the therapies for advanced heart disease, and I feel privileged to be in this time with everything that's improving so quickly. A quick statistic, I don't do too much statistics because I think most of our listeners forget them, but approximately 3,600, 3,650 heart transplants were done just last year. I think you've indicated to me how valuable heart transplant is as a resource. Why do you feel this way about heart transplantation?
You know, that's a great question. One of the most sacred part of the heart failure is that the donors who are very, very young and have passed away untimely, and the emotional trauma of that donor and the family members and the losing somebody, the loved one, is very traumatic. And we as a heart transplant cardiologist continue to go through that process every time we receive a donor call.
Yeah.
We hear those dramatic stories, how a donor as young as, being in adult cardiology, as young as 18 or 20 years have died untimely. And this is the most valuable resource available to our patients. And I every day feel grateful for the family of the donor, donors who have decided to, donate their one of the most valuable, organs of their loved ones. So it's a very emotional thing for me, even every day, even now after, 7-8 years of my career in the heart transplant. So it's a very sacred gift. Mm. It's one of the most valuable and gift, and we need to take care of that. However, it comes with the supply and demand. We have, approximately 3,500 patients waiting in the list for heart transplant. So, and there are, more than 35,000 people, with heart failure. So there is who would be needing heart transplant. So there is this 3,600 donors have given away their heart, and we need to take care of those emotions. I think the gift and the resources went into it, and this is what my overall feeling about the transplant.
Yeah, and thank you for that. And it doesn't, it can't be left unsaid, the burden that is borne by the doctors, because doctors like you, they get to know their patients and the patient's families. And when a patient is lost through this process, it bears heavily on you. And we recognize that. I've had that discussion with Dr. Weil. We talked about that, the disillusionment and things like that can come about from having to face those things repeatedly. It's certainly not an easy thing. The doctors are human beings. And the patients certainly know that. I can tell you again personally, I've said this before, but my transplant doctors, they become part of my family because we realize that they care so much about me and my caregivers, my wife, my kids, and it's so appreciated. So thank you for mentioning that as well.
Absolutely, Gary. I'm so grateful that that you have not as a patient in waiting for the heart transplant to happen, but also you have done remarkable research and advancing the understanding of the heart transplant process. I truly feel so happy, and I wish you luck. I wish you luck. I really feel that that you have waited long enough, yeah. And I think that heart transplant would certainly be a life-changing event, yeah, despite you having an
MRI. Yeah, no, listen, I know there's no guarantees, but I feel like the stars are aligning, so I'll be fine, and I feel great. I'm relaxed and ready to go again. This will be my fourth open-heart surgery, so I'm no rookie. I know what it looks like. I know what it takes to heal and all that, so I'll do just fine. As a patient with Class D end-stage heart failure, I await the gift of a heart transplant. When that time comes, I would love to know that my donor heart is being protected in the best possible way. I have learned that the Paragonix Sherpa Pack allows my new heart to be contained in two rigid sterile canisters, which provide a triple barrier of protection. The Sherpa Pack is monitored for optimum temperature control throughout its journey on its way to the operating room, and my donor's heart is being preserved in an FDA-cleared preservation technology. All this makes me feel very confident that my heart transplant team has done everything possible to ensure my successful recovery. I think my donor would also love to know that the gift that they gave to me arrived safely so that I could have the best likelihood at a second chance at life.
So Gary, just on that note, I mean, you may have shared it with other speakers in that podcast. What were the main, you said you had four. I know LVAD was your third.
Yeah, so 1998, I had my first aortic valve replacement. That was in Long Island at St. Francis, and that was a natural valve. It lasted about 9 years. I chose a natural valve at the time because I was a dentist and didn't want to be on the blood thinner.
Yeah.
That was necessary for the mechanical valve. And so I made the rational decision to do a natural valve, knowing that in about 9-10 years, it would have to be replaced. And sure enough, 9 years later, I had the aortic valve replaced again with another natural valve at NYU with Dr. Colvin, who was a wonderful surgeon. Unfortunately, he passed away about a year after he placed my valve. At the same time, he repaired the mitral valve. And so that was open heart surgery number two, if you will, except that one was a robotic surgery.
I got you.
And it wasn't until 2019 when I ended up with the LVAD surgery, which was my third open heart surgery. And so when I get my heart transplant, it'll be number four.
I got you. Yeah. As you know, the valvular heart disease, or we call the valvular disease, is one of the leading cause as the population is aging, who develop heart failure. And most often there is a general perception that once you get your valve replaced, then things will be fine. But however, I think we have to understand the fact that before valve becomes, dysfunctional, there is an ongoing insult to the heart muscles years, for decades, before you get your valve replaced. So as a consequence to it, of what has happened 20 years before your valve was replaced, there is a good chance that most of the people end up developing heart failure over the next 10 years' time.
Right. Oh, that's interesting.
That we often see. Like, for example, if you have a leaky aortic valve or valve stenosed, before the valve fails, you have had almost 20 years of undue stress on your heart muscles, which has made heart muscles quite fatigued, and they usually do not come back to the normal state after valve replacement. So those people tend to develop heart failure in on average about a decade or so.
Yeah, so people like me with a congenital bicuspid valve, which is what I had, it's not unusual for it to rear its head in their early or mid-40s, which makes sense. That's about when it happened to me, because you can go, as you said, for 20 or 25 years before it actually becomes real apparent that it needs to be replaced. It's interesting. But yeah, because there's so many causes of heart failure, so I was never real sure that, while it seemed logical that the valve disease would have been the cause, it could have been sustained high blood pressure or a flu I caught on the plane, you know, a virus on the plane. So, but now it makes a lot of sense the way you have described this. So thank you for that.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely.
When most people hear about heart transplant, I think their minds go directly to a vision of the operating room. And while the surgical phase is certainly a most important phase of treating the heart transplant patient, the pre- and post-surgical management of the patient is at least as important, and perhaps more important, given the length of time you will be treating the patient after the surgery is long over. Can you discuss the commitment necessary on the part of the transplant team after the heart transplant surgery, and who that team is comprised of?
I think, Gary, I think your line of questioning, I must tell you that you have chosen your questions very carefully and after very thoughtful research. And I think thank you for the opportunity for explaining me, because this is a very important part of heart transplantation. The surgical is the pinnacle of, you know, where you have OR and surgeons, and then that has been projected in the movies on, you know, how the heart surgery happens. But there is a lot of hard work goes into identifying patients, listing them into heart transplant waiting list, getting the offers and matching them appropriately with the current system. And I know at one of your podcasts you have discussed about artificial intelligence. We probably will get there soon. But then this matching process, the team which entails, we call it pre-transplant evaluation, and then the heart surgery, and then recovery from the heart surgery, and the post-transplant. So I'll briefly describe the pre-transplant part is we do at most efforts to make sure that the only organ which is in your body remains dysfunctional is your heart alone. And it takes enormous efforts to maintain the perfusion to your kidneys, to maintain perfusion to your liver so that your liver doesn't fail. We do a lot of efforts to make sure that your physical activity and strength and the frailty as a consistently heart failure patients being on heart failure list, sometimes it may take months to years, and you know the frailty becomes part of it. We have frequent visits to our clinic. Sometimes we tune up some of these inotropes, some of those patients who are on those, we call it rocket fuel or jet fuel, to keep their heart going. We keep them in the hospital sometimes to tune up those medications, and then make determination if they cannot wait long enough, then we have to talk about temporary mechanical circulatory support devices such as balloon pump. You, I think, have had that.
I've had everything.
And then if those, they, you know, you're still not getting enough, you know, the time, you do not have enough time to get the heart transplant done, then we'll have to make a decision about, is it worth going with the LVAD, which is a durable circulatory support devices, which requires a surgery. Of course, we have come a long way of minimizing the surgery. We call it a lateral thoracotomy approach, where we don't go through the sternum. And that commitment, we have to have multiple meetings in our transplant committees in order to make sure that the patient stays safe and safely can go to transplant, either straight to transplant or through LVAD, our left ventricular assist device pathway. That's the pre-transplant part. And the post-transplant part is a lifelong commitment from the heart transplant team, which requires our transplant coordinators, our transplant cardiologists, our nurses in the clinic, to make sure that they to maintain the fine balance of not rejecting the heart versus not getting any new infection, which are always, you know, looming threat. And after 3-4 years, you know, the all the immunosuppressive therapy, we have to strike a nice balance so that people do not develop cancer related to immunosuppression.
It's not a panacea as such, because it presents another group of problems that we have to try to take control over in those years. But it's certainly a trade-off. I can get rid of all the hardware. So I know personally, I think that it's worth the trade-off, if you will. But it's not perfect. It's not a perfect system yet.
Yes, absolutely. And let me share you, but at the center at University of Kansas Health System, I was the second heart transplant cardiologist hired, and to build up the program, in 2016, when I joined the faculty, we had zero heart transplant. Now we are blessed that we have all the resources aligned, and the hard work of our now 7 faculty members and the 4 transplant coordinators. And we have built a program from 0 to 130 heart transplant in the last 5 years, along with the enormous LVAD, where when I joined, it was 2 LVADs. And now we have more than 180 LVADs implanted. One of the fastest growing program in the country. I personally feel that it is one of the most rewarding journey I would claim that I have had in my long career. That 130 heart transplants are of our family. I say this is my extended family. We meet every year We celebrate our success as a team because we have actually people in our transplant program, our transplant recipients have numbered T-shirts. So they pool money and created a T-shirt, which every year has sequence number 1-230 now. They all put together and take pictures. And then we this is phenomenal success we have had over the past few years.
Yeah. And I can't help but add, just so you know, again, and I know you know this, but from a patient's point of view, when we see that there's gratitude on the part of the doctors with the nurses and that the team is celebrating successes and congratulating each other on things that were well done, even on a day-to-day basis, I think it increases the confidence and probably makes for better outcomes for the patients.
Oh, absolutely. This keeps me going. This keeps me going, Gary. I still, whenever, and I'm very exhausted on a long, you know, call day for almost, you know, running almost 7 days, seven nights, the smile on the faces, the celebratory mode of their family members, mm-hmm. you know, it's just having a big extended family in the Midwest area. I mean, I'm so proud of what the sacrifice, and I'm grateful for not only donors, but also the recipients who entrust us with their lives and undergo multiple procedures and surgeries, trust our decisions, they have a full trust of, you know, what decisions we are making. This is amazing. And not only I've seen their kids growing, some of them have gone into college. This is enormous pleasure. That keeps us going.
That's great. It's great to hear. And thank you for that. It gives a lot of confidence to the patients I know that are listening. So thank you again for that. You know, as we discussed before, heart failure as a specialty is relatively new, perhaps 10 years only, you know, and you've helped to build your transplant program at Kansas. But what would you say is either special about your heart failure training program there, and how do you see heart failure programs changing even after only 10 years?
No, Gary, I think I'm glad that you brought this again. As I said, that education and training is a very essential and an integral part of the creating the workforce in the heart failure community, because it requires a specialized knowledge and skill to take care of the growing number of heart failure patients. And as you know, there are only about 1,000 heart failure specialists across the country, and there are only approximately, you know, 70 or 80 heart transplant cardiologists adding to the pool, but then some of the pool is retiring. So advanced heart failure training is very critical for the field. And that's where I worked with our administration and faculty and GME, the graduate medical education, to highlight the need for building another heart transplant fellowship program here. And we have hired our first, actually recruited our first fellow this year. So I'm excited about passing on the knowledge from our faculty to this fellow, and our fellow is excited about it. He was our internal cardiovascular trainee after 3 years of training program completion. So he's very excited about the hard work we do to keep our patients, build the program, and I'm so grateful that I'm able to serve in the role as a program director for the Advanced Heart Failure Fellowship Training.
Yeah, no.
Building up the educational curriculum, lecture series, and in fact, inviting some outside speakers to share their experience from other programs. And then finally, the future generation of heart failure specialists. I think we are very excited as heart failure faculty at our program.
Oh, that's great. And I hear that in your voice. And congratulations on that accomplishment. And it's exciting and so beneficial for patients too. So I thank you again for that.
Sure.
We had a discussion with another doctor recently, Dr. Lala, about the term heart failure. Do you have any feelings about the term heart failure? Do you think that this makes for a misunderstanding or even a more negative outlook than this disease process deserves?
Yeah, you know, I joke about it. I tell my patients is that when my mom and dad used to say that failure is not an option, now I joke with them, this is an option for me.
That's right. That's funny.
Yes. That's so funny. So I, you know, it doesn't really matter to us. Yeah. There's an ongoing push for identifying or changing the term as heart failure to heart function, improving heart function. And I think the heart failure specialist or patients, when they hear that they've got heart failure, it does have a negative connotations to, or the negative sense of defeat in that word as failure. But, you know, I don't know how the field they will grow out or will they change it into, but I'm very comfortable with the current set of heart failure, because even if it has its negative sense or the sense of defeat in there, but there is an opportunity for success. And and I think all the efforts need to align to make heart failure as heart success.
Yeah, and to that, I've actually used that in a couple of things that I've written. I say that I have a congestive heart success, not congestive heart failure.
Right.
At this point.
Absolutely. So, I tell my patient, failure is an option for me, but it's not an option for you.
That's great. thank you so much. This has been so exciting for me, and it's such a privilege for me to speak to you today. I wanted to just ask you before we go, because I know you have a busy day probably ahead of you. Is there anything else you would like to share that our listeners should know about congestive heart failure?
As I said, I think the biggest reward for me to see a patient is a timely referral to our center or any center in the United States with our workforce and the resources what we have in the heart failure clinic. It's not that we are extraordinarily smart. We have equal training and equal, you know, expertise in terms of treating patients, but we have more resources and we can timely identify patients who are sliding very rapidly before it's too late. And this is what I would recommend and listening to tell our audience, tell my colleagues whenever I talk to them, is to that this is the most important thing. If somebody has one hospitalization related to heart failure or high doses of medications and getting low blood pressure, and if their kidney dysfunction is early on, we will be happy to take care of those patients. We are there to make the heart failure, as we said, we term as a success.
Well, this has been such an honor to have you as a guest on The Heart of the Matter. And certainly personally, I don't usually talk quite as much about my own situation as I did today, but I learned a lot. I was thinking of when you were speaking about all of these things and the fact that I've experienced them. One time I was getting photos made by my photographer for social media, and he had me open the Mayo Clinic book. It was a big textbook that I own. And he said, just page through it and make believe you're reading it, you know. And I started paging through it, and I realized that I pretty much have experienced everything in that book as a patient.
That's
a little disheartening.
That is. I know. The heart failure patients go through a very poor quality of life when they get advanced. So I can imagine that what you were experiencing.
No, I'll tell you what. I have not had a poor quality of life. I've had an extraordinary life. Oh. And I had a few bumps along the road, that's all.
Absolutely. I think the resources, not many resources are available to many patients across the country where they can be, you know, seen and in a timely manner. So Gary, I'm very happy for you, for your journey and the work you are doing. And
Thank you.
You know, it is amazing that you the kind of spirit you have despite being through so many you know, surgical procedures This is what the heart failure is, and you are spreading the word. This is great.
Yeah, well, having good spirit is a choice. You know, I didn't necessarily have a choice on some of the things that happened to me, but I certainly had a choice to take it in a positive way, and that's the way I went. So that's what that is. It was kind of simple for me, but I know it's not easy for everybody.
Absolutely.
And that's the reason we are making this program and programs like it. I'm so proud of my other organ donor advocates and people who are in the area of advocacy for, you know, organ donation, because many of them have gone through an extraordinary challenging times in their life, sometimes their whole life. For me, it was periodic. I was very lucky compared to some, but still they rise above that and are able to be advocates. And it's a nice group of people that I'm lucky enough to now know. So thank you for all that. I want to thank you again for all you've done in your local community, especially at University of Kansas, where you've advanced that program so beautifully. And for everyone else across the country and in our global heart health community, with your extraordinary contributions and accomplishments and with your dedication to your work in an effort to extend people's lives. And thank you for sharing this time with me. I hope we can do this again soon, maybe after I receive my new heart, like you suggest.
I think that'll be wonderful. I think we would like to see what your experiences have been, you know, post-transplant, especially first 3 months. Are always memorable, going through all these biopsies and other stuff to rule out rejection. So we'll look forward to talking to you, Gary.
All right. Thank you so much.
Take care.
That is our podcast for today. Please join me next time for another intriguing, informative, and entertaining conversation. Please visit our website, at www.drhearttoheart.net for upcoming podcasts. Actually, if you just go on your computer or your phone, theheartguyspeaks.com will have all of the podcasts. You can listen to all of my podcasts, theheartguyspeaks.com, real simple. If you'd like to be a guest on the Heart of the Matter podcast, please email me at theheartguyspeaks@gmail.com. Our podcast can be found on Apple iTunes, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and all you have to do is search The Heart Guy Presents The Heart of the Matter, and you will find it. And this is Dr. Gary Sherman, The Heart Guy, wishing you peace and hope. Today's podcast has been brought to you by Paragonics, the creator of the Sherpa Pack Cardiac Transport System. In a recent study, the Paragonics Sherpa Pack Cardiac Transport System has been shown to decrease patient waitlist time, as well as post-transplant cardioversion and primary graft dysfunction rates. In the wake of the 2018 allocation change, transplant surgeons across the country have been looking for ways to combat the hurdles that longer transport distances present. The Paragonics Sherpa Pack CTS has shown all these improvements over historic ice cooler storage, all while traveling farther and longer than previous methods. To learn more about Paragonics' advanced organ preservation technologies, please visit paragonixt.com/theheartguy. That's paragonixt.com/theheartguy.